Welcome to the LTC University podcast. My name is Jamie Preston. I'm your host. And today we're here with a returning guest. We have Dr. Casey Herring. How are you doing, Casey?
Great, and you. Thank you for having me again.
Yeah. I'm super excited. I really enjoyed our conversation last time. And your passion is unmatched, and we're super excited to have you today.
Well, thank you. I love being on the podcast. Yeah. Podcasting is one of my favorite things to listen to.
Yeah, me too. I'm a huge podcast nerd. I could go down a laundry list of
me
podcasts.
Too.
Yeah, but we're going to be talking about the LTC University podcast today, obviously.
Yes.
And today we're going to talk about drug interactions and polypharmacy. You're a pharmacist for SC House Calls. Give everybody a little background on what you do.
I am a clinical pharmacist. We practice ambulatory pharmacy, which means we are primary care pharmacists that work in a doctor's office setting. We do visits with patients. We go over their medications. We provide education on disease states, medications. And we also give recommendations to the providers about what we've noticed on a drug list or what we think could make somebody's medication regimen better, or renal dosing medications, for example, is a big thing. An example is like Eliquis should be dosed 5 milligrams twice a day, but you would need to decrease the dose to 2.5 milligrams twice a day if the patient has one of the two. If they're over 80, weigh less than 60 kilograms, or their creatinine is greater than or equal to 5.1. So it's just knowing, just looking at those little things, labs versus the drug list, and just being a second check on looking behind that. Or sometimes we see the labs before they're scheduled for their next visit, too. So it's just being part of the team and working as part of the collaboratory practice of providing the patient the best care available.
Sure.
Through all of our experience.
Yeah. So let's talk about kind of the SC House Calls model here, because, you know, they utilize mostly nurse practitioners and physician's assistants that go into the home, or they do go into home via telehealth, and, you know, provide that care. And they're the ones prescribing. They're the ones, you know, basically doing a your healthcare visit just like you would a primary care doctor's office, except it's in the home.
Yes, sir.
But they have another layer, which I think is really amazing.
They do. Yeah. I actually have two great nurse practitioners in my area, Stephanie Rich and Emily Pogue, that I work very closely with. Mm-hmm. And they'll actually call me from a patient's home and put me on speakerphone while they're there during the visit. And we'll all three sit and discuss their medication if there's something emergent or something that they need to change.
Right.
Which is really great. And it'll just be during my work day between my visits, and we'll get it fit in and we'll talk right then. And then the patient can hear their the nurse practitioner's conversation with me and mine back. And then they get to feel like they're part of the decision-making too, of what medications or why we're choosing the medications that we're choosing, or if we think there should be a change or not. And I think that is great because they get to see how our collaboration works.
Right.
Even though it's just me and Stephanie via the phone on speakerphone, so the patient can be right there and involved.
Sure. Yeah. Which in a typical setting, in a typical doctor's office, that doctor would, you know, give their, you know, diagnosis, prescribe whatever. And then, you know, a person would go to a typical pharmacy. They would walk in, they would see the pharmacist for maybe 30 seconds to a minute. The pharmacist would say, this is what you need to do, this is what you need to take. And that pharmacist would never talk to that provider.
Patient, to that provider, and never have access to their labs, their cultures, their results, their past medical records, anything like that.
Yeah.
And we have that direct access.
Yeah.
Just like if I'm in the middle of a consult, I have Dr. Donato, Dr. Spate on standby that I can reach out to.
Sure. Absolutely.
That, you know, that are over that work close with me. So, and I also have their, the nurse practitioners of the patients I can reach out to during a consult if something comes up. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't usually happen because like if they change medications, like with Stephanie and Emily, I'll usually follow up the next week or a few days, you know, a few days later to see how the changes even went too.
Yeah, absolutely.
And try to step in as that middle piece between their visits with the practitioner, just to check in on that, because then I can reach back out to the provider for them and let them know if something's going on or if the patient's doing good until right. their next visit in 2 weeks.
Right.
Since we're on a week off a week. And that just gives that extra layer of the patient feeling secure in their changes and in their provider's decisions, and knowing that somebody is looking after them and just making them feel cared about.
Sure.
Is that, I think, a big thing that South Carolina House Calls does that a lot of doctor's offices don't do.
Sure.
And part of that is the relationships that the nurse practitioners build with these patients, and then that we can build with them, even though it's through telehealth. As a pharmacist, I can still build relationships with patients.
Absolutely. Yeah. And when you know somebody, you get to know them, you get to know kind of their needs and kind of where they're at. And it just makes for a better experience with your healthcare provider, because you can really get to those goals and those needs much quicker when you know somebody a little better, you know, and it's just so much better. So
100%, because I think in healthcare, sometimes people, providers, healthcare workers, we forget we got to meet people where they are.
Yeah.
And so this patient, we might can start off by multiple rapid changes. This person, we might need to make one change at a time and take it slow and kind of hold their hand and walk them through it. But we need to remember where to meet people. And that also plays into, you know, how I need to follow up and the nurse practitioners need to follow up.
Yeah.
And knowing that and working together with them and the communication that we're able to have with each other allows us to work together and them to depend on me and me to depend on them to make sure we're both given the basic care and the patient is getting everything they need, because they'll be like, oh, can you follow up because I made this change and this change that we discussed? And I'll be like, I'll be glad to, and I'll let you know how they're doing. And it just works great, and it gives a good continuation of care.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a much, much deeper than a typical, you know, healthcare provider. It goes much deeper and provides better care and keeps those patients out of the hospital.
And Jamie, I want to add this. I think it even gives better care than you would see if you had an ambulatory pharmacist directly in a doctor's office too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Only because you have to come back in for that second appointment with a pharmacist separate.
Right.
And us doing telehealth and being in the patient's home, because most of our patients being homebound are unable to get to appointments, it gives us a chance to follow them more closely. So we do provide, I think, that little niche that just people miss the most is that through this telehealth, we're able to get more patients seen by a pharmacist or a specialty nurse practitioner or provider better than any other doctor's office or practice model that's out there, in my opinion, because of the way we can closely work together and the way we see patients.
Sure. Absolutely. So let's jump into this a little deeper here. So let's start talking about drug interactions. Now keep in mind, I know nothing about medications. I can't pronounce most of them, you know, so.
Yes, me either.
Yeah.
You know, don't feel bad. So the big thing with drug interactions is they're going to show up.
Yeah.
And the one thing that I feel like providers need to know that is there is a such thing called interaction fatigue. And that is a common problem associated with the use of clinical support systems or, you know, AI in Athena or Surescripts that are going to show every drug interaction.
Yeah.
And that's because most of these commercial knowledge databases show they over include interactions that probably will never happen.
Right.
But it's a fear of liability. They show them all. Mm-hmm. So then it's trying to discern which ones you need to override and are okay to override, and which ones you should stop and say, hey, maybe I shouldn't prescribe these together, or if I do, I need to monitor for this, this, and this.
Right.
And I just wanted to make sure in the pharmacy world, we're very familiar with it. When we're filling prescriptions or order, you know, do an order entry at a hospital, where we see drug interactions all the time. Mm-hmm. And it's just that there's a interaction fatigue occurs as a consequence of a high volume of alerts. But also, you know, there's that human component of which ones I need to override, which ones I don't. And it's just kind of knowing and realizing that through their up to date, they should have a way to link into LexiComp, which mm-hmm. is the drug information source that our clinical pharmacists prefer to use.
Sure.
And I know a lot of hospital systems use, because it's very thorough on drug interactions. And then just knowing the difference between like a category A interaction, we're not even going to worry about category B. We're not. Mm-hmm. When we get to a category C interaction, that means we're just going to monitor therapy. We don't necessarily have to change the drugs. We just want to monitor them closely for side effects.
Right.
Or adverse reactions. Yeah. When it comes to a D, that means consider therapy management changes. Those are the ones where we try to avoid the combination, but that combination is going to be a benzo and opioid. But in some people, is it necessary? Yes. But you have to make sure that the risk and benefit work out. Is the benefit outweigh the risk of this combination for this mm-hmm. patient?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then making sure that you make the patient aware of what they need to look for too. Mm-hmm. You know, with a benzo and opioid, you're going to look for, decreased respiratory rate, over sedation, that kind of thing.
Right.
And then a category X interaction means avoid this combination altogether.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and those are some of the main ones. And you'll see some that are category D, but then they're time dependent interactions. Levothyroxine is a huge example of this. It means that if I administer these two medications at the same time, there's an interaction. But if you possibly wait 2 to 4 hours, or with levothyroxine, it's 30 to 60 minutes before other food, drinks, and medications, then the interaction is not exist. Then you don't have to worry about the interaction.
Right. Yeah. There's so many things that affect this in so many different ways. And this is why it's so important to have the pharmacist involved in this conversation with the patient, with the provider. It just shows another reason why this is so important.
100%. And levothyroxine being a big example, that is a thyroid medication. And the thing is, you don't think side effects about it. You really think about just monitoring their levels, their thyroid levels, and adjusting the dose.
Mm-hmm.
But the big thing about those thyroid levels, the biggest thing that can make them off, is how the patient takes the medication. Are they taking it with other medications? Are they taking it with their coffee in the morning, but think they're separating it from everything? Coffee will affect their levels because it'll decrease the level of levothyroxine. So a lot of that isn't even going to be dose changes. It's us coming in and reiterating everything the nurse practitioner has told them.
Yeah.
And that's where that collaborative care comes in too, because I've had nurse practitioners reach out, like Kelly, Vegas, Davis, she'll say, hey, can you go over this with them? I've tried and tried. Will you try? Yes, ma'am. You know, and that is so helpful mm-hmm. for my pharmacy consult. I know exactly what I need to hone in on during that conversation to reiterate to the patient to help the provider give the best care.
Yeah. And I know how I am. Like in a lot of these providers and the pharmacists, this is second nature to them. They've been through, you know, so much schooling and education, whereas somebody like me who doesn't have that background, doesn't have that, when I hear these medications, and if I hear them once, I still don't, it takes a lot to get that information in and to get it to make sense and to know everything that I need to do. So when I go to a pharmacy and pick up my script, and they've tell me, hey, you take it this way, do this, don't take it with this, blah, 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 all the information. It takes a little bit to process, to understand that. So getting this over and over again from different people really, really, really helps.
That is where you hit it. I think hearing it from different healthcare professionals really drives it in.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's what a consult can be. A consult can just be because the nurse practitioner needs you to go in behind them and reiterate what they've said about the risk or benefits of starting a medication or treating or not treating. And that's where we can come in. We are definitely here to work as part of the team. And it's working great. I feel like the relationships between the clinical pharmacist and the providers are wonderful in this company. And that's a big thing to be said, because there's not a lot of places where, you know, you can have groups of healthcare professionals taking care of a patient and literally say that we all put the patient's best interest above anything else. And nobody's offended. We're actually reaching out to each other, bouncing ideas off each other, listening to each other's thoughts of why we should or shouldn't start a medication, or if we should change it yet. And that's huge, because that's one of the things that can hinder collaborative care. And in this company, we don't have that.
Yeah.
We all work together, and it's just so great. And the patient's the one that benefits in the end. And the fact that we're able to give that kind of care and have those kind of relationships with each other, it is a huge testament to this company and how we want to take care of patients.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. What are some other common drug interactions that providers need to look out for?
Yes. So then there's going to be anticoagulation. Anticoagulants, especially warfarin, interact with a lot of medications. Warfarin itself interacts with NSAIDs. So that's going to be ibuprofen, aspirin, antiplatelets, any kind of a lot of antibiotics. It interacts with ciprofloxacin, Flagyl, Bactrim, erythromycin. So tramadol, so warfarin interacts with a lot of different medications. So that's one that you're going to want to definitely watch those interactions, because they can increase the effect of warfarin and possibly cause increased risk of bleeding.
Yeah. And I didn't even think, I'm thinking of all the prescription medications, you know, I didn't think about the interactions with non-prescription like ibuprofen and different things like that.
Yes, over the counters. And then another thing is a drug class or a class-class interaction. But you have to, when you have those pop up, this is another thing that could cause a little bit of interaction fatigue, is that thyroid hormones and statins are going to come up as an interaction. Well, what really interacts with levothyroxine are two major statins, and that's simvastatin and atorvastatin. It doesn't necessarily refer to all the statins. It doesn't refer to pravastatin, Crestor, which is rituvastatin, or pravastatin. So it's mainly just atorvastatin and simvastatin that can interact with levothyroxine and can result in increased levothyroxine metabolism. So it's knowing that if it's relevant for the whole class are just a few drugs in the class, so they're going to call it a drug class interaction. And so that's just another thing to look at. And then there's drug food interactions. Statins and like grapefruit juice is a big one that we'll think of. And then warfarin interacts with, you want to watch how much vitamin K they're getting through their food. So those are just the main types of interactions we want to look out for. And then, just knowing that, is the interaction a good one? So, like, you wouldn't want somebody on a potassium-sparing diuretic. So you wouldn't want them on spironolactone and on potassium supplement, like potassium chloride, those things. And a lot of people forget that Viagra interacts with isosorbide nitrates, and it can cause really bad severe hypotension. I've seen that interaction live in the hospital. It actually got through. And we forget that Viagra is used to treat pulmonary hypertension. And this patient had pulmonary hypertension, so he shouldn't have even been started on it, even though it's a drug to treat it, because he was on nitrates, nitroglycerin. He was waiting on a heart transplant. He was young. We found him down in the bathroom. His blood pressure had dropped. You know, so those interactions get through, and it's huge. And it's just a matter of knowing what they are, and when they're big enough to, you really need to stop what you're looking at. And
yeah.
another big class interaction, SSRIs and triptans for headaches may result in serotonin syndrome. And then the other big one I wanted to hit on was tramadol. Tramadol is a pain medication, but people forget that tramadol can do two other things. It can lower your seizure threshold, and tramadol can affect serotonin. So when you take it with other serotonin modulators like SSRIs, you can have a risk of serotonin syndrome.
And what's serotonin syndrome?
Serotonin syndrome is when you have too much serotonin, and you can, so that would be caused with SSRIs. So that would be just antidepressants, antipsychotics, tramadol. Fentanyl is the other pain medication. And then dextromethorphan are all serotonin modulators that can affect the amount of serotonin you have in your brain at any time. And serotonin toxicity is something that we have to watch out for.
Sure.
And tramadol is one of the main people think of. It's not a class 2 narcotic. So it's that class 3 through 5 that nurse practitioners can write 30-day supplies of, but it just has some really bad side effects.
Sure.
And that's that increased risk of seizure threshold and that serotonin, the effects it has on serotonin itself.
Yeah.
And those are some of the main ones. And then another big category that we get a lot of interactions sent back from pharmacies is going to be about QT prolongation interactions.
Mm-hmm.
One of the main medications for that is going to be Celexa, erythromycin, sometimes fluoroquinolones. But the main drugs that are associated with QT prolongation are going to be antiarrhythmics, antidepressants, antiemetics, antihistamines, antipsychotics, fluoroquinolones, and macrolide antibiotics. And so just looking and seeing if the how at risk is this person for having this interaction.
Yeah.
So a lower risk is if you're an older patient, older than 65, female, and on a loop diuretic, you're at lower risk of having QT prolongation if you took two drugs that can cause QT prolongation.
Yeah.
You're at higher risk if you're hemodynamically unstable, you have a diagnosis of heart disease, you have heart failure, or if you've had an MI, bradycardia, or history of arrhythmia, then you're more likely to have this bad arrhythmia if you take this combination.
Wow.
And then the other thing you need to look at for a patient just to decide if they can continue this is, do they have a history of their electrolytes being abnormal? You know, one time my potassium's has been low, you know, but it's just once. But are they predisposed based on other chronic diseases they have, such as chronic alcohol and substance abuse?
Mm-hmm.
Are they malnourished? Do they have kidney or liver disease, lung disease, or cancer? And those are the things you want to look at to decide, well, should I start a Z-Pak with this patient because they're already taking Celexa or they're already taking Prozac? And looking at where their risk would kind of fall is another one that I know that gets shot back from pharmacies a lot, especially because it involves antibiotics.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not going to override it until they've heard from the provider that it's okay to do so.
Right. Yeah. And I didn't even think, you know, obviously, you know, you hear, you know, don't mix alcohol and different things like that with medications a lot of times, you know. So, you know, having to know that patient's lifestyle, you know, and when you're in the home as a SC House Calls provider is, you get to know a little more about that patient versus somebody who just comes in the clinic.
100%. And you get to observe things. You get to mm-hmm. see things.
Yeah.
So they might tell you one thing, but you can see when you walk by their trash can that might not have a lid on it, that it's full of beer cans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and then the other thing is with these pharmacy consults, you'd be surprised what gets shared with me that might not even get shared with a home provider
mm-hmm.
or a telehealth provider.
Sure.
Pharmacists are known as one of the most trusted in the healthcare profession only because we are the easiest to access.
Yeah.
You can walk in any pharmacy, CVS, Walgreens, whether you get your medicine there or not, and talk to a pharmacist. Mm-hmm. That's why. Just easy. Is there easy to get in touch with? You know, you'll call your doctor's office. You'll have to leave a message and wait for somebody to call you back.
Right.
Where you can pick up the phone and call any pharmacy, whether you go there or not, and ask a question about a medication to a pharmacist directly.
Sure.
So, and that's why we'll get a little bit more information. And that's, but knowing that, and then knowing how much alcohol, mm-hmm. you know, because that is a big, big interaction. Alcohol interacts with most medications.
Yeah.
And people don't realize that. It is a huge interaction. And then explaining that to somebody.
Right.
Explaining that if you abuse substances and you already have heart disease, what it can do to your heart. Mm. You know, it will cause your heart to quit functioning. And just explaining those things in a respectful way, and making sure that the patient really understands the risk that these things have, because alcohol is a drug. So let's look at it like that mm-hmm. and see how it is a drug-drug interaction with these other medications that you're taking.
Right.
You know, and here's what it can cause, and explaining that to the patient and letting them know, this is why you shouldn't drink while you're on this.
Right. That's great. Yeah. It's a lot of really good information there. You know, let's jump into, you know, give people an overview of what polypharmacy is.
Polypharmacy. Okay. Polypharmacy. The longer the list of medications and supplements taken, the higher the risk of an individual of inappropriately using medications and of having serious drug interactions.
Yeah.
So we want to make sure that we're, cancer is a hard one because it's where you just have to treat the side effects of the chemo sometimes, mm-hmm. but it's 100% what we don't want people to do. You don't want to treat the side effect of one medication with another medication, but I consider cancer different. You know, all chemo is going to cause nausea and vomiting, and we need to treat that.
Sure.
But in every other disease state, we don't want to do that. We want to simplify the medication regimen so the patient isn't experiencing side effects.
Right.
And because of polypharmacy, approximately 10% of hospital admissions for older individuals are associated with hazardous drug interactions. Mm-hmm. The most common drug interactions included are cholesterol-lowering medications, minerals, and thyroid therapies.
Right.
Three easy ones to manage. And it's just a matter of making sure they understand and that we have them on the proper dose and the proper time. And so drug interaction effects, especially that we're going to look through for with these older patients that we want to keep out of the hospital, includes falls, functional decline, and even death. But the biggest thing is falls can lead to breaks. Right. And once we have a break, a hip break, a pelvic break in an older person, their life expectancy drastically lowers.
Wow.
So if you're 80 and you break your hip, the chances of you, your how much life you have left is going to greatly decrease. Mm. An example, my grandmother, she battled colon cancer for 3 years. She felt good one day. She had three little brick steps down to her yard and she was going to plant flowers. She fell and broke her hip.
Wow.
Within 6 months, we're in hospice and passed away.
Hmm. Wow.
Because once she broke that pelvis, she didn't want to, at rehab, she didn't want to work with physical therapy. She didn't want to get up. I mean, she had her good days and bad days already because of the chemo.
Sure.
You know, that's already killing your energy and how good and bad you feel. And then to throw a break on top of it, that's why it's very important to understand medication interactions and then understanding medications to avoid in elderly.
Yeah.
And there's a good tool for that, and it's called the Beers Criteria. It kind of gives us a list of drugs that we should avoid and why we should avoid them. And most of them is going to be that fall risk and functional decline.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that can cause confusion, anything that can cause a fall, we want to avoid.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's
and
great.
So the biggest thing with polypharmacy is looking at ways to simplify medication regimens. You know, if somebody's on lisinopril and hydrochlorothiazide, we can put them on the combination tablet. Now, instead of taking two pills, they're down to one.
Yeah.
You know, and then make sure at a certain age, you can, at 80, you don't really need to take all these vitamins and supplements. Let's start cutting those back. Because your body doesn't need as much because it's not absorbing as much.
Right.
And just understanding when we can appropriately stop medications.
Yeah.
And that
feels
the big
good
part
too.
Of prescribing.
It feels it great does. For a patient, you know, when you're used to taking certain amounts of medication and you get to get rid of just one sometimes or, you know, two, it makes a big difference and it's much more freeing.
Yes. Kelly sent me a consult one time and she's like, can you help me get this patient off all these supplements? And he had more supplements than he did prescription medications.
Wow.
His prescription medications might have been 4. His supplements might have been 15. By the second visit I did with him, he mentioned how great he felt since he stopped taking all of those supplements.
Yeah. Wow. That's great.
And the thing that patients don't understand is they're marketed these on TV and commercials and through friends and neighbors and all that. And they're not FDA studied.
Right.
So they're not studied to cure or, you know, treat a disease state. But do we need vitamins and supplements? Yes. But knowing how to correctly take those is a big thing. And when to... It's time to just, you don't need them anymore.
Yeah. And when you have a consult with the pharmacist, when that provider has a consult with the pharmacist, you can learn these things and figure that out. Just like Kelly Vegas, you know, did with you. That's what makes this so much better than traditional healthcare.
They can directly send it for what they need covered or they won't. Specifically covered in the pharmacy consult to help benefit the patient.
Yeah.
And then too, we'll get them just because they're like, I got one the other day, they're experiencing this and these effects. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure it's from this one medication. Can you do a consult and see what you think? Nurse practitioner was 100% correct. I believe right. Well, along with her that all of the adverse effects the patient were having were from the one drug. And then we'll get them, hey, this patient has new chronic kidney disease. Can you do a pharmacy consult and check behind me at the renal dosing?
Yeah.
100%. And so there's these ways all the time that we can help. Or, hey, I wanted to, they'll send a message. Hey, I tried to start this, but it's showing an interaction and I haven't seen this interaction before. I'll be like, nope, good to go. You know, so it's a really good way to work together and make, and it really is making sure the patient gets the best care possible.
Sure. And that's what it's all
and
about.
And it's saving the time that a pharmacy that was going to get it, even if it's an interaction that we know about, we know it's okay to take together, is saving that time for that call back. Because in the notes section, the provider could put aware of this interaction, okay to feel.
Yeah.
And so it decreases that lag time between the outside pharmacy or the pharmacy filling the medication, calling the provider back. But because the provider's like, I'm already aware, I've already looked at everything, it's good to feel.
Yeah, that's great. Wow, this is a lot of great information that more of the providers are going to understand, and it's going to, I think, really help. Casey, thanks so much for what you're doing, all you're doing at SC House Calls. It's such a great service, and we appreciate all you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And hopefully we can come back, and if they want more topics, we can hit disease states and drugs, anything.
Absolutely.
I'm glad to be back anytime.
Yeah, we're gonna do it. So yeah, absolutely.
Perfect.
Casey, thanks so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you. You know I love it. Awesome. I love being on a podcast. Yeah. I feel special.
Well, we love having
you. This is my dream come true, Jamie. I want to be a podcaster.
Awesome. Well, you are. You are now.
So, well, thanks. Awesome. Thank you for giving me the opportunity, and I would love to come back anytime.
Absolutely. We'll definitely do it for sure. Thanks, Casey.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. And if you could leave us a 5-star review, we would really appreciate it. Visit our podcast website at ltcuniversitypodcast.com. You can also subscribe to one of our other podcasts in our podcast network, The Disrupted Podcast with Scott Middleton, Experiencing Healthcare with Matt Staub, and The Thriving Practitioner Podcast. Thanks again for listening, and we'll be back next week with a new episode. Have a great week.